Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, June 13th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a nice day in gold today, and certainly the move was up. $10.50 for gold today at $1,284. Silver is up 10 cents today at $17.48. Platinum was down to $994. Palladium was up to at $549. The USDX today, pressure on that. It was up earlier on the day, right now down 0.27. at $94.39. Crude oil was down 0.44 at $48.63. And paper markets today, you had the Dow, 132 points to the downside at 17,732. The NASDAQ was down 46 at 4,848. The S&P was down 17 at 2,079. The 10-year yield keeps dropping, down 0.02 at 1.62%. And naturally, we saw the euro stronger, 113 up 0.39. Japan got hit big overnight, 3.5%. Hong Kong was 2.5%. Both London and Germany were down. Germany was down bigger, 180, and London a little low, about 1.25%. All eyes and focus is on the Brexit. And the vote seems to be heading towards a leave the Eurozone. But, you know, when it gets down to it, there's... You know, I'm sure they're having lots of discussions. I've seen reports where, you know, no one wants to vote what they really believe is better for their country. They focus on the economy, and they focus on, you know, how is it going to hurt us, even though perhaps leaving the Eurozone might be best for them in the long run. They have a tendency to be concerned, as one would, their jobs, their money situations, and so forth. So they could have a very strong leaning to leave the Eurozone, but when it comes down to the actual vote,
we'll watch and see. But there are polls that say there is a 6% in favor of leaving, 10% in favor of leaving, 19%
in favor of
leaving. You know, who knows what the truth of the matter is, but there aren't any polls that I've heard about. Well, I don't, so far as I know, there aren't any polls that where a significant number of people appear to be in favor of staying. It seems like, if you had to guess right now, and I think the decision is the 23rd of this month, or the referendum is the 23rd of this month, 10 days from now. I don't know how long it'll take them to fix the votes, count the votes, whatever they do with votes over there.
Fix the votes.
So, 10
well,
days.
Well, we saw the same thing with Scotland. 11,
12 days, we ought to know what's going on there. But for the moment, the odds appear that Britain is leaving. I wonder about what's the problem. Why are they so afraid that Britain's economy can't withstand leaving the European Union?
Well, I'm not sure in their agreement whether they get trade favors and so forth. I don't know if any of that would be eliminated. They certainly don't use the euro, so they use their same currency. I'm not sure, you know, in their actual agreements with the eurozone what it truly encompasses to what they would be so concerned about. I would have to think trade. But I still believe that if you're doing business with someone, you're going to continue to do business with someone. I mean, they're hurting so bad anyway, so how much more can they lose? I mean, they can't get their economies going as it is with, you know, with an open pocketbook from the central bank. So, you know, I can't imagine how much pressure it would put on Britain. So I think it's more or less the after effect.
I think it's hyped. I think they're just trying to scare people.
Absolutely.
If you bail out of this, you'll be sorry. You'll be sorry. I don't know if they necessarily will.
The biggest concern is what will happen afterwards, and that is who else will pull away from the zone.
I understand.
And we talked about this before. You have Scotland. They're ready to, you know, try to push that through again to pull away from England. You have all the other countries that are having financial problems that they probably all know it would be best if they went back to their own currencies, you know, default on their debt and go back to their own currencies. So that's what I think they're trying to avoid.
Well, one thing about it, it seems to me, I don't know what's going to happen to the English pound if Britain bails. Well, I don't think it's going to be that serious to the English pound, but if Britain walks out of the eurozone, I wonder what that's going to do to the euro. And I'm inclined to think it's going to cause it to diminish in value. I'm inclined to think that they will suffer some inflation on the euro and, you know, it'll be devalued and become worth less than it is right now. But I don't know. No one does. Maybe, you know, again, I get the impression that this whole hullabaloo is hyped. This is perhaps much ado about nothing. We'll watch and see, but I have a hard time understanding what's going to happen. Who's going to be unemployed? Who has a job today? And if Brexit and Britain leaves the eurozone, who's not going to be employed tomorrow?
It's the same kind of hype that we've seen with Greece and their debt. It's the same kind of hype that we see with the Janet Yellen and her rate hikes. It's the same kind of hype that we've seen in various situations financially, and they all turn out to be meaningless.
I know.
So people are making money on it. They're swaying public opinion. They're trading off of these the hype that they do. And then someday something's going to come along. They'll hype it. And you know what? It will have a major impact. And people will lose. And
they'll say, see?
I told you.
That's right. We told you so. For the last 20 or 30 times, we warned you. And finally, we were right.
I mean, just like all the meetings that they have, we're just not sure the Bilderberger meetings, what really came out of that.
I didn't hear much coming out of the Bilderberg meetings.
Oh, well, it's supposed to actually go in as far as their discussions and so forth with certainly immigration, certainly our elections and so forth.
Probably my impression, mainly, I don't follow.
Probably mainly Trump. Did he go to the Bilderberger meeting? Did anybody see
No,
him
he
there?
Probably hosted it, but he didn't go there himself.
Okay. Then we know he's not their chosen.
I think they are recognizing that they don't have too many choices left. They've got to be scared, in my opinion, that the kind of special interests that they support are in jeopardy. This whole thing, they're losing control of the system, in my opinion, and they've got to be sitting back and saying, oh, what can we hang on to? We're not going to be able to control the whole thing, but what can we sacrifice and what must we hang on to? I think that might be something they're talking about as they're trying to decide, okay, we've got to give up some of the power.
Yeah, but we're really not even true. We're really not sure if they're really concerned at all. So, you know, we won't know until things play out. And then we'll see that, yeah, it did make a difference. And
we may never see.
But I mean, they'll
like
just
tell us what they're up to. But you can kind of deduce from the leaks, and there don't seem to be any serious leaks. In the past, I had the impression
there really
aren't some
ever.
Leaks, and there'd be some radical.
No.
Oh my gosh, they're going to do this, that, and the other.
No,
yeah.
No. They're pretty tight-lipped.
Yeah, generally,
they're pretty tight-lipped.
I get that, but.
And before we head into the break, I don't know where you, perhaps we should, I don't know if you want to talk about Orlando.
Are you talking about Disney World?
Never been there. I went to the Disneyland. I went to Disneyland in California.
I did too.
And I was not impressed. And
I went there. I went there back when I was a kid. And I would have to suppose, I think it was in the 50s. I went there. I don't know when they opened up, but they'd only been open for a year or so. And I can still remember that place as a child. I mean, it's one of those memories that were special to me. I was impressed. I thought, holy cow, is this place ever cool?
Well, I didn't go until I was probably 20. 21. I was older, so that's why. And I think, too, I think when you're a kid, when growing up, it was nothing but Disney. I mean, watching it Sunday night, watching, you know, all the cart, you know, I mean, it was just like, oh, man, I wanted to go there. But my parents couldn't afford to take us there. So I had this, you know, this idea of Disneyland all built up in my head. And then when I get there, when I'm 20, it's like, really? So I was I was disappointed, but.
But that wasn't what we were talking about, I don't think. You're talking about the shooting and the death in the gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Up to 50 casualties, if I understand correctly, maybe 20 deaths. I don't know. Are those numbers roughly correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say about it. You know, I mean, the one thing that impresses me is it has nothing to do with being a Muslim. That's just because the shooter was Muslim has nothing to do with this. As when the husband and wife pair came and shot up, I don't know, a dozen, 15 people, whatever it was, 6, 8 months ago, they were Muslims. But it had nothing to do with the Muslim faith. And then we had the shooter that shot, I don't know, 4 or 5, half a dozen people, I don't remember. This goes back a year or more. And he was also Muslim. Right? But again, first, it has nothing to do with the Muslim faith. Okay? It's all about guns. We need to outlaw guns. Muslims are good. Muslims are fine. But don't get into it. We need to get rid of the guns because that's where the trouble is.
I think this time they won't succeed. I mean, and even the last time in San Bernardino, they have a little bit harder time to try and push. There were some things they tried to put through in January, and they failed. And I don't think they're going to be successful this time either. But you're right. You know, right away, it's the guns.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this guy has had a history. I mean, he was invested, and you know what? I know there's discussions and claims that this is a false flag. There's certainly some oddities about it. I even have to admit to that. And you only really recognize these oddities if you follow the reports and, you know, you kind of put one and one together and you're trying to get two, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. So you see these oddities and you begin to question, exactly what happened, and the answers that you're given really don't, you know, answer your questions. So it's very, you know, it's kind of easy to go in that direction. So certainly when we see the president that we have and everything else, it's.
Well, the president assures us that, you know, I don't know what the story, what the truth is about Obama.
Yes.
But there's a guy right there, so far as I know, he's yet to produce a birth certificate that can prove he was actually born in this country. Right? We don't actually know where that guy was born. A lot of people think he is homosexual. A lot of people suspect that he's Muslim. I mean, again, doing that fictional novel I talk about once in a while, back a couple of years ago, here's my plan. I'm going to write a book about a black homosexual Muslim who gets elected president of the United States. There's not a publisher in the world that would take that book. They'd say, you're out of your mind. And yet a lot of people believe that's what we have. And it is consistent with Obama's sometime seeming support for Muslims, but even that's up for grabs. I mean, is Obama really supporting Muslims, or is Obama primarily, is he killing them with drones, for example, and bombs and whatever? I mean, he hasn't been bashful about killing Muslims. Although, who knows?
That's if we are, but even the military, says what he allows us to do is not enough. It's just like, you know, do this and, you know, just enough to make people believe that we're active.
I get you. I'm just saying that I wish the guy would, like Trump, you get the impression Trump will tell you what he's up to. All right? He's not going to lie to you. He may say something stupid and absurd, but he's going to tell you the truth. Obama, you can't listen to the man without wondering, you know, whether you're getting the truth or, a very persuasive presentation that's substantially false.
I don't remember, but there, just for picking up certain things, supposedly there were 21 shootings, mass shootings, various numbers, since he has been in office, and I think there was like 8 that were, you know, a little bit. I don't remember that many of them. I got that number, and I've heard this number several places, not just one place, but many different places.
Well, it's not exactly a surprise.
It's not a surprise, but I couldn't remember that many. And just under his presidency is my point. It just goes to show that.
It goes to show that you can't afford to elect black homosexual Muslims, or the number
with
of mass
tranny,
shootings will go up.
With a tranny wife.
Yeah, exactly.
With a tranny wife.
The whole world has become mad.
That's insane.
You know, I don't know. How many mass shootings do you think we had in this country back in 1900? I don't know. Certainly, you had a smaller population. I wouldn't have expected as many, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were a similar number proportionally.
Yeah.
The difference is we've got a news media that if somebody gets shot and killed up in Podunk, Iowa, everybody in the country knows about it. Where it used to be, if somebody got shot and killed in Podunk, Iowa, you'd hear about it in Podunk, and after that, it wouldn't go any further. We lived in a world where we didn't think the whole thing was coming unglued because the mainstream media was not reporting every little thing that happened every place in this country or on the face of the globe. So I don't know whether the media's bias is creating a bias where we think things are worse than they are. It's not their intention, but it might be the net effect. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I pulled up the U.S. Mint Treasury on Silver Eagles today, and looks like the country is having a slow month in Silver Eagles, so I'm running a Silver Eagle special today, and this will be good to the end of the day. Tomorrow, I will give you the same discount, but it will be based on the new price of silver. Only because this price is so low, I can't carry it over till, you know, if silver goes up 5 cents, then, you know. So this will be adjusted because usually I will carry my specials as long as I can at the same price for as long as I can, even though the spot prices might move up. So Silver Eagles today are selling for $19.95. You can buy 20 of them or 500 of them. The price is going to stay the same. Orders of 300 plus, shipping is included. I will have to add shipping at these prices. The regular price on a Silver Eagle right now for 20 of them, the price would be... I should have had this done before. They'd be running about $20.40, So that's quite a drop in price. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. And these are 2016s. They're not backdated ones. They're not toned ones. They're beautiful 2016, so give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. If you have any questions for us, you can email us at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
Gains and Pains Capital publishes a little newsletter. And the one today's newsletter has a headline is "Today's Economy Like That of 2008." A lot of people are commenting on the similarity between circumstances now and the circumstances in 2007.
And who is one of those, Alfred?
I have no idea, Melody.
I've been talking about the.
You're saying you are one of the people that's been commenting on that.
For over a year. I've been talking about last year was like 2007, and I felt like this year would be like 2008. And I've been saying that for over a year. So, go ahead.
A lot of people are saying it. I'm inclined. There's a lot of.
And I was probably one of the first ones.
Probably so. He goes ahead and says the U.S. economy was entering the worst recession in decades. This is so. Remember, 2007, late 2007, early 2008. The U.S. economy was entering the worst recession in decades, but 99% of economists didn't see it coming. Right. Night after night, the media proclaimed that the economy was rock solid. They missed the warning signs as experts emerged to proclaim the Standard & Poor's 500 would be soaring to ever new highs. Well, we're on right track. We are right back into that environment today. Judging from three fundamental economic indicators, the U.S. economy is again approaching or perhaps already in a recession. And the first one they bring to our attention is the best measure for U.S. economic activities are tax receipts. State sales tax receipts indicate how much people are spending. Federal personal income tax receipts show who has a job. Both are collapsing into recession, recessionary territory. And they've got a graph here that you can't see, of course, but it does indicate that we are again, both the state sales tax and the federal income tax numbers suggest that we are going back into a recession comparable to what was seen, after 2000, between 2000 and, say, 2002 and 2007 down to a bottom in 2010, 2009, we seem to be on that trajectory. It's not proof, but it's evidence. Second thing they want to point out is the delinquency rate on commercial and industrial loans is rising. This means that businesses are late making loan payments. They only do this when they don't have the cash handy to pay the bank. This only occurs during recessions. All right, another graph. And the graph is interesting because it points out that around 1990, heading into a recession at that point, the percentage, the number on their graph of corporations that were percentages, presumably, that were delinquent and making and repaying their loans was 20 on their graph. And in when the same thing happened back in 2002, thereabouts, the percentage of corporations delinquent rose to 40. And in 2007, 2008, 2009, the number rose to 140. And currently the number is right about 100. Now the point is we are already, the delinquency rate is higher than it was in 1990, higher than it was in 2000, and perhaps approaching the peak that we saw in 2008, 2009, and so on. So it's another one of these signs, another leaf in the breeze to indicate that we have trouble, perhaps breathing down our neck. Third one is stocks are just 1% away from their all-time highs. Another graph you can't see, but it says in the late 2007, early 2008, the economy was in collapse. But stocks held up on hopes that the Fed could maintain the bubble. Similarly, today's stock market indices are holding near record levels, even though most other indicators suggest that we are near or already in another recession. Now, when today's stock markets are holding at near record high levels, even though those levels do not appear to be supported by fundamentals, many suspect that the Federal Reserve is supporting the markets artificially. Even if that's not true, when you see stock market indices at record high levels, what is more likely? that the stock, it's already at record high levels, will go even higher, or that a correction will push the stock down by 20% or more. Other than manipulation and artificial stimulation, can you think of any fundamental reason why the equities markets should rise significantly higher? Yeah, they can be maneuvered, you know, artificially. I give you that. But in terms, are there fundamental reasons on supply and demand, legitimate market forces that will push the equities markets higher? I can't think of any fundamental reasons why that will happen. Given the markets must move one way or the other, I mean, that's the whole idea. The market is constantly, it's going up, it's going down. It might move sideways for a while, but it's basically going up or down. There's a trend. It'll go up today and down tomorrow, but there's generally a trend where it's going up or it's going down. If it's not going up, it's going to go down. If it's not going down, it's going to go up. That's not absolute truth, but it's close to it. There's a point to it. Given that markets must move one way or another, if today's markets are not likely to go much higher, what's the probability that they will instead go lower? And from my perspective, you know, it's that probability is significant. Doesn't mean it has to happen, but it's significant. These three indicators, tax revenue, corporate loan delinquencies, and near record high stock market indices, all suggest that the U.S. economy is far closer to another recession than it is to another recovery. So, you know, we got a few reports, a couple more leaves in the breeze. They're not necessarily telling us something that we don't already know or suspect, but they confirm what many of us know or at least suspect, and that is that we are close to some serious problems in this country. And here, following that up, here's an article from Market Oracle. And the headline is, "Now Obama warns Americans to be prepared for disaster. What does he know?" Recently, Barack Obama urged citizens to be prepared. He broke this new ground on May 31st, just a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, with a speech to the FEMA National Response Coordination Center in Washington. He explained that it was up to each citizen to be prepared for disasters. This president should, this preparation should extend to having an evacuation plan and having a fully stocked disaster supply kit. According to President Obama, one of the things we've learned over the course of the last 7.5 years is that government always plays a vital role.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do, one way or another.
Yeah, like either, but is the role, is it causing or is it part of the cause or part of the remedy? But government always plays a vital role. But he continues, he says, but it is every citizen's responsibility to be prepared for a disaster. Now, the reason it strikes me as interesting is over the past, I don't know, however many years, the last 5 or 10 years, we have heard of government condemning people that are stockpiling food, condemning people that are preparing for some sort of a disaster as potential terrorists. But here we have President Obama says, "Now you better get ready." He doesn't say specifically what to do, but he says you do have to be prepared for a disaster. Presumably, he means stockpiling food. I'm going to guess that if he said, "Well, when you say prepared for a disaster, Mr. President, do you mean we should have some gold and silver coins?" I'm going to guess he's got to say yes. What if President Obama was here in the room with us and we said, "Mr. President, when you say prepare for a disaster, do you mean we should purchase guns and ammunition?" Now, he's going to be reluctant to say yes, but I don't see how you can realistically prepare for what the president calls a possible disaster, although he didn't give us any specifics on what he had in mind. But how do you prepare for disaster and not say, "You know, I think I better get myself a six gun or maybe a semi-automatic or a rifle?" If we're going to have a disaster, doesn't it follow, especially if you're stockpiling food, doesn't it follow that you're going to need a gun? Obama, the article continues, Obama promoting prepping is certainly a change. Both the FBI and Homeland Security have seen prepping as a sign of incipient terrorism. as a matter of policy. In fact, you can get investigated if the federal government notices signs of unusual prepping in your house.
Hoarding.
But now Obama appears to be warning people to prepare for something. Right? Didn't say what. Did he mean a hurricane? Does he mean a tsunami? How about an earthquake? Nationwide drought, economic collapse, civil unrest, bank runs. What's he talking about? But this is just contrary to a history of pumping sunshine, blowing smoke, telling everybody the recovery is just around the corner. Everything's great. It was a speech that was delivered to FEMA. All right, it wasn't exactly where he took the podium and spoke to the American people per se, but he's still saying it's up to the public to prepare for a disaster. We should be prepared. Now, whether he's just giving us this advice just as a general rule, it's like people telling you got to have X number of dollars in your bank account. General rule, just to be safe. All right? Maybe Obama, when he says he's warning people there's a disaster, to be prepared for a disaster, maybe he's just making a general recommendation. But it is so far out of character for him to do so. After years of, you know, trying to push optimistic hope that the economy is going to recover, it is so far out of character that we have to, that it's reasonable to sit back and say, what's this guy know? What is he expecting? All right? I don't know what he means by a disaster, but what could he be talking about? And it doesn't seem likely to me that he's making a general statement that applies to the whole country if he's only concerned about the possibility that there's going to be an earthquake in Oregon and the state of Washington. The Cascadian zone, or is there going to be an earthquake? Does the whole country need to get prepared because there might be an earthquake in the northwestern United States? Does everybody need to go into that prepper mode?
Some degree, yes, because...
it's a practical reality. Yeah. Insofar as he seems to be warning that the whole nation needs to be prepared for something, he's talking about some sort of an adverse event that affects the whole country at the same time. Now, what could that be? And the one that comes to my mind is something to do with the banking system. What can they do to the whole country at the same time? I mean, you could collapse the economy in theory, but even if you did, the banking system would be among the first problems that you'd run into. But he didn't say this, but the implication of his warning is that the whole country better get ready because something is perhaps headed our way. And if it is, you know what I'm going to say. You understand if you've listened to this program any length of time. I'm going to just say, look, it's just another sign. Here's the President of the United States saying, get ready. We are headed for problems. All right? And one of the things you'll want to do if you're going to get ready is you're going to want to sit there. You're going to get yourself some gold or some silver.
And it's just not the president, it's this one who really has created a lot of the problems that we have. So for him to even bother to warn anyone, you know, it is.
It's odd. It's very odd.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so odd
of him, of all people.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things where you say, if the president is starting to give people the same kind of warnings we've been giving them for a couple of years, it begins to look like maybe our warning is going to turn out to be accurate. Let's take a break for some more commercials. Melody and I will be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We've got a caller, Joe from Arkansas. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Al and Melody. I had an observation. Hello. I had an observation I wanted to make about the price of gold, and that's this. In 1984, I lived for a while in Nevada City, California, and that's gold mining country. And there were some people there that made a living by panning gold from the river, the Yuba River that ran close by. And I talked to some of them, and at the time, the price of gold was between $300 and $400 an ounce. And they told me that somebody good at gold panning, you know, somebody highly skilled, somebody very good at what they were doing, could find an ounce of gold a week. Mm-hmm. And so I thought about that a little bit, and I thought, well, that's about what the wages of any highly skilled person doing some kind of highly skilled trade is going to be. You know, like an electrician maybe, or a plumber, or somebody really good at construction work. You know, they're going to make about the same at that time, about $300 to $400 a week. And, just recently I was listening to a report on some radio show about West Virginia coal mining. And they said that a good coal miner in West Virginia, made about $60,000 to $80,000 a year. And that would be highly skilled work, I would assume. And so I thought about it a second, and so that would work out to, I think, but somewhere around $1,100, $1,200 a week, and that's about the same as an ounce of gold. So it seems to me that the price of an ounce of gold, the sort of what you might call the natural price of an ounce of gold, is always about the same as whatever somebody highly skilled at some trade would make in a week's wages.
So if the price
of gold goes very much above or below that, I would think, you know, it's kind of a temporary, you know, maybe bubble or manipulation situation, and that the natural price would be right around the wages of a week of highly skilled work.
Well, I understand the logic of your argument. I think the problem you have right now, you know, it's hard to put a finger on that. Do you think this means that the price of gold should go up right now because the rate of pay for highly skilled work is more than $1,300 a week? If so, I don't know. What do you calculate? What do you believe is there an appropriate weekly wage for people that are highly skilled?
Well, I'd kind of think about it this way. You know, I think I've heard you talk about some economists have figured if there wasn't so much overregulation and taxation and, you know, government interference in the free market in this country, then the average person in America would be making somewhere around $300,000 a year, which would work out, I think, to around a little bit less than $6,000 a week, you know, somewhere around there. And there's so many people saying that the price of gold ought to be, you know, around somewhere around $5,000 an ounce, you know, if there wasn't the manipulation to keep it down. So it looks like maybe both the wages and the price of gold are being manipulated to keep them down.
No doubt.
And if they would both rise to their natural level, you know, and then gold would be about $5,000 an ounce, and the wages of a person in highly skilled work would be about $300,000 a year.
Well, it all sounds, is it too late for you to sign up to run for public office? I think you've got an argument that would attract a lot of attention, and there'd be a certain number of voters say, yeah, $5,000 a week sounds good to me. So are you making plans to run?
Actually, I'm not. No, I'm trying to help some good people around here to get elected. You know, I'm trying to do what I can to help people that I think are good to get elected. But no, I have no plans whatsoever to run myself.
No, I understand.
Good.
Well, I'm just...
Well, I think your comparison there, Joe, I mean, it is kind of your analysis there. It is interesting how they should track together. And I don't know if you would call it wage inflation, you know, wages keeping up with inflation and of course, gold being the hedge against inflation. So, you know, but yeah, that's where we would be. You know, I can't imagine in the world that we live in having a highly skilled, you know, being 300,000, but if all things were
free
or where they should be,
you know, what confuses the argument is what is the value of the dollar? When you say should be $5,000 an ounce, is it $5,000 at the current value of the dollar? Or is it $5,000 an ounce after inflation reduces the dollar from where it is right now, worth roughly a nickel, to where it's worth only a penny? Then what? I mean, these are the kinds of, when you have a fiat monetary system and you start making calculations in terms of money or currency, it becomes confusing because the currency is elastic. It doesn't have a fixed value. It's like doing algebra, where you're trying to find the value of, I don't know, the price of something, when it's expressed in something that's elastic. It might be more, it might be less. What is it? We don't know. How do we find the price? It's strange, and a lot of the confusion we deal with is, in my opinion, because we've accepted this fiat monetary system. If you had gold, if you had a gold or silver-based monetary system, when you borrowed something, you borrowed 10 ounces of gold. You borrowed 100 ounces of gold, and you had to repay 100 ounces of gold. You had to repay 10 ounces. That's how many ounces you borrowed. That's how many you repaid. You didn't wind up being as confused with the issues of inflation and deflation as we are right now. You try to make these computations and the rest of that. It's like measuring the distance from San Francisco to New York City with a rubber band. You know, this thing stretches. It stretches, it compresses. Hard to follow, but I understand the logic of your arguments, even though the numbers are, who can say? Unless you can give us a flat... Yeah. Tell us what dollar...
Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, well, it would seem to me things sort of have a natural price based on their cost of production. You know, the cost of production plus the average profit in the economy, say, at the time. You know, that would be kind of the natural price of a thing.
I would look at the price of gold. I mean, one way to look at the price of gold, not necessarily the only way, not necessarily the best way, but I would look at it from this perspective. It's got to reflect how much gold can you mine out of the ground in an eight-hour shift. And it varies from mine to mine and country to country and whatever. But just the same, the price of gold that we extract from the earth, however, whatever that cost It has to be something that's compatible with the daily and weekly wage of the man who's digging it out of the earth. You've got to get enough money for the gold to at least pay for these people that are driving these tunnels. Do you follow what I'm saying? I'm not just talking about just wages in general.
To stay in business, you have to, for whatever you produce to stay in business, you have to get the cost of your cost of production back, plus a bit of profit. You know, you have to make a bit of profit to stay in business too.
That's exactly right. And what I like about that notion, might not be accurate, but it crosses my mind, is that it guarantees that wages would be set at a level where a blue-collar worker can make enough to support himself and his family digging gold out of the ground. It would mean that the wages were, the price of gold was not set according to what Donald Trump thought it should be, or the billionaires thought it should be, or George Soros would. It would have to reflect the blue-collar labor that dug the gold out of the ground. Whatever the cost of that labor was, that would have to be incorporated in the price of gold. And I like that. I like that idea because it kind of guarantees that ordinary workers receive something like what people today they call a living wage. Well, it might be that, if the price of gold had to at least reflect the value of the labor going into it, who knows, maybe that would help blue-collar workers and the midsection of the economy, blah, blah, blah. So in any case, does that make any sense to you, Joe?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And considering the fiat currency, as I understand it, when they created the Federal Reserve in 1913, they said one of the purposes of the Federal Reserve was to keep inflation down. But from the beginning of the country, while we had a gold standard from the beginning of the country until 1913, as I understand it, there really wasn't any inflation.
There was no inflation.
But since the Federal Reserve was created, we've had horrendous inflation.
I think although they claim to keep inflation down, the Federal Reserve's primary business has been to cause moderate inflation throughout its history. They say, we're here to protect you from inflation. No, you're not. You're here to make sure that we don't see any deflation. That's what they were afraid of. They'll try to cause 2-3% inflation per year. They'll try to avoid 10% or 20%. But they're trying to cause inflation, and they have succeeded dramatically. And part of the evidence of that is everybody hears us talk on a regular basis, and it's part of the commercials on this program. Gold is, the dollar has lost 96-97% of its value since we went to a pure fiat currency in 1971. That's evidence of a persistent policy of inflation. When that value, it used to be worth 100 cents, now it's worth less than a nickel. Why? Because of government, and particularly the Federal Reserve's persistent policy of inflation. But now they're running out of opportunity. How much more can they inflate the dollar before it disappears? And what happens then, Joe?
So far it has been, fairly well. As currencies go, seems like so far the American currency has been fairly well managed so that the inflation hasn't gone, just absolutely crazy, like what we hear about in Zimbabwe and the Weimar Republic and so on like that.
So far.
But of course, there's no care, but the United States is more and more becoming, a third world country where things managed, well at all with any integrity whatsoever. And so there's no guarantee that we couldn't have that kind of hyperinflation in the foreseeable future.
All I'm talking about is we've lost 95, 96, 97% of the dollar's value has been lost in my lifetime. Last 45 years or thereabouts, they've lost 95% of the value. It follows we can expect they're going to lose 96, and then 97, and then 98, and then 99, and eventually we're going to lose 100% or very nearly 100% of the value of the dollar. And when we get to that point, what happens? Does the dollar cease to exist? Do we go back to gold and silver? Do we get a new colored currency? Instead of green, it'll be pink. And it's certainly has been policy to strip the dollar of its value. Otherwise, it wouldn't have lost 95, 96, 97% already. There's only 3% of its value in 1971, only 3% left or thereabouts. When it's gone, then what? When it's gone, you better have some gold or silver. All right? What happens after that? Who knows? Maybe that's the disaster that President Obama was warning us about. You have any more comments, Joe?
No, that'll do it for me today.
All right, Joe.
Yeah, thanks
Thank
for taking
you.
My
Appreciate
call.
Your call.
Goodbye.
Yeah. President Obama is warning you need to be he's saying the people, you and me, need to be prepared for disaster. What's he doing here? Among other things, he's saying that there's something coming, or at least possibly coming, that is so big that government can't deal with it. He's saying, oh, well, I warned people. I told them, you know, you need to be prepared. It's up to you to be prepared. Well, he's right. But he certainly hasn't warned us for 7.5 years. And now that he is warning us, you have to wonder, is this just an aberration or does he know something is imminent? And that each of us would do well to prepare for what might be a disaster. And if so, what do you have to do to get prepared? Food, water, guns, bullets, gold, silver. First aid kits. Books teach you how to do things. Tools. If this thing ever goes south, as badly as it might, if we ever see the time when, you know, we hear all these doom and gloom reports, and I've said it a bunch of times on this program, the worst case scenario is the least likely scenario. All right? And by definition, the worst case is the least likely. People say, oh, the whole thing's going to collapse and everything. Well, probably not. But still, we could have a lot of trouble. It might not be the worst case, but it would be a serious case, a bad case. And those who are prepared, who have prepared for this, prepared for a possible disaster, they're the ones who are most likely to get through it with the least amount of trouble. And if they're prepared financially, I mean, you're going to see homes for sale. Worst case scenario, you can see homes for sale that might go for a couple ounces of gold. If you happen to be one of the people that bought ounces of gold back when you had an opportunity to prepare for a potential disaster, before the disaster was finished, you might be able to pick up, who knows, new car, new house, whatever, for just a couple ounces of gold. We have to go because Melody and I are out of time for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Meantime, we'll be back. Hope you'll tune in at that time. And in the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Joe from Arkansas. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.